shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Ooh, we are tired.
I've already walked 16 kilometers today, do you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. All that for one slice of pizza, and it was worth it. I'm Donald.
I'm Dylan.
And this week we bring you not five, not six, but seven albums.
Could have been much worse.
It could have been much worse, because there's been, we've definitely dived back into album release season.
Yeah.
I feel like we got a little bit of a breather there over August, but September so far has been nonstop.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in November we might be able to pick off some of this stuff that we left off.
Yeah.
There's some great records that we missed.
Typically, the way the year runs would definitely suggest there'll be a little bit of a lull towards late November, early December, because the only thing that comes out around Christmas time is usually compilation albums. So, you know, we might be able to do a couple of specials, do a couple of list kind of weeks or albums that we missed throughout the year. So that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, once we get a While She Sleeps Christmas album, then we'll be in luck.
That would be fun. So the albums we're going to cover this week include an EP by Failure, new albums from Emma Ruth Rundle, Therapy, Metric, Horror My Friend, and am I missing one?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
And then we're going to go back to 2011. Oh, Thrice. Did I say Thrice?
Yeah,
Excuse you. I knew there was one. Thrice as well. And then we're going to take a look back at Nero's 2011 debut album, Welcome Reality, which is exciting because I feel like they're another band that we talk about quite a bit. And we have not sort of jumped into discussing them in depth before. So
yeah,
I'm excited for that. So I suppose without any further ado, we're going to dig into the albums, or in this case, the EPs. This EP is called The Furthest Thing by Failure. I don't think we need to intro Failure again, do we?
So what's the title so far?
So the title so far, assuming... So this is the third EP, and all three EPs have had very strange names that appear to be forming a complete sentence. So far the sentence is, in the future, your body will be the furthest thing.
From your mind.
Oh.
I'll place a bet.
That's pretty good, actually.
I'll place a bet on that.
Okay. I'm not even going to bother calling your... calling that because I think that's such a good guess that I think it's probably correct.
Yeah.
So what they seem to be doing is releasing their fifth album in little 3 to 4 song chunks.
Yes.
Really, it seems to be three songs plus a segue.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done here as well.
The famous segues.
Yes, indeedy. So this again is three proper songs plus their now 12th. Segue. They roughly follow the same pattern as the first three insofar as there's one kind of all-out Failure banger, one more experimental mid-tempo track, and then one what you would kind of call a ballad, Failure ballad. This is the least ballady of the three so far.
Yeah,
but still.
I think this time's a bit different.
Okay.
It's a bit more consistent in its songwriting and heaviness, I guess. Yeah, it seems like halfway through the album, the themes are really starting to connect.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there. I think in terms of this doesn't feel like three totally different strands of Failure in one release. This is three songs that sit together more comfortably. What's your immediate takeaway from the EP?
My favorite one yet.
Is it really?
Yes,
great.
Of
That's
course
awesome.
It is.
That's
it's straight
great.
To the point.
Yeah.
It's huge. The first song is the first banger out of all the songs we've had so far, I think.
I would say that No One Left off the last EP was as much of a banger as anything on here, but this is really good stuff.
Well, this one's a dancey one.
Yeah.
Which is a little unusual. It's got a good bit of swing.
Oh, yeah.
Found Away, which I really
found
like.
Found Away has that. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Like it's almost
at first it seemed a bit cluttered at the chorus, but the more I listen to it, it seems like that was meant to be the intent.
Yeah, because I think you know what they've done here is, especially on this particular release, is they've really consolidated everything into very distinctive instrumental lines. So like in Found Away, it appears cluttered on first listen, but that guitar hook in the chorus is is so well structured and thoughtfully put together that once you kind of see the full picture, mm-hmm. I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a really, really good, the tone of the guitar is nice and abrasive and buzzy, and the line itself is great. So great. I think it really works.
Yeah, great jump to it, great plotty kind of verse. I love the intro. I love the way the intro just comes in very gradually.
Yeah.
It's very really... it got me excited. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like I was driving to this and it was really cool.
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely. I think it's fantastic. Yeah, I really, really, really like that first one, Found a Way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of moves into the zone that we haven't gotten maybe since that very first song that we heard. What was that called? Dark something.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dark Speed?
Dark Speed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's in this cold, clinical, almost medical sounding zone.
Yeah.
Atmospherically, it reminds me of like Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, it's weirdly modal. Yeah, parts very industrial.
Very industrial.
Yeah, it was weird. I was to really bring it into theming. I was driving through the boglands of Ireland on the way to Galway.
Yeah,
and this came on. I was like, this is perfect.
Right,
this is so startling for like a barren landscape.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it feels
aged a landscape.
Yeah, like it feels weird, like it's like a featureless face. It's very strange, that song. Distorted feels. It's good though, really, really good.
Yeah, great effects. I think
there's a really nice mix of actual synthesizer and then what, you know, guitar that's sort of affected to sound like a synthesizer.
Yeah,
it almost sounds like it's like medical machines are kind of beeping and whirring and stuff like that. And he uses the I don't know what you call it when you sweep the pick over the top of the head of a guitar, but you know, it kind of creates that atonal ringing sound that just builds
really
atmosphere.
Powerful. It's really like cool. If you really like the 4/4 time of dance beats, this is, I guess, the industrial solution to that. It's got very it's got a beat, a consistent beat, but it's very off kilter and more like a march.
Yeah, it's very, very good, very impressive. Mm. And then, you know, the segue is the segue. It's your kind of typical atmospheric.
I like it. It's really chill. Yeah.
You know, they just are, they're breathers.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the main event.
But. Yeah. But I'm excited for them. I recognize them as much as I recognize any of the songs.
That's right.
Like live, I'm sure. It's like, oh, this is Sieg 8 or whatever. Like,
right. Do they play them live in your experience?
They do.
Okay.
They do.
I don't think we got any when I saw them in New York, but they may be peppering them into the set now. Mm-hmm. And then I think probably the weakest track is the last. It's still good. Still really, really good.
I don't think it's the weakest track.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
I think it's equal. They're all, like, as I said, this is the most equal EP we've had so far.
Yeah.
Just slightly different. This is definitely a Solaris-themed.
Yeah, Solaris, like, or Magnified also kind of, like, reminds
me. Pure, unfiltered, spacey failure, which I love so much. It's got a great midsection to it. It's very careful in the way it it's constructed. Very slow, but at the very end it does explode, which I quite like.
That's true. Yeah. Heavy and Blind. Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's very, very. I say it is a little bit failure being failure, but that's what we wanted all along. So it's no cause for complaint. It's very good. And you're right. Yeah, there's definitely like a old school 90s failure vibe. Absolutely. To it, which is always welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, again, it's four songs. We're kind of tackling this album piecemeal, so I almost feel like we need to go back to it once all the EPs are out.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably go back and do a more overall review of the album.
Yeah, I might rate the other EPs higher once I know the context.
But I don't think there's too much more to say about it. I mean, you know, if you ever enjoyed Fantastic Planet or Magnified or whatever, this is like another 3.5 songs to get you excited about more failure. It's really good.
Like new soundscapes for failure. What a thing to be pulling at that time of their career.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, but it's unmistakably them. I think they're one of the most distinctive sounding bands that I can think of. Certainly of among bands that I really, really like. I think Failure, just the second they start playing, you go, oh, yeah, there he is. And even with before Ken Andrews starts singing. But everybody's pulling their weight here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's only three of them. Ken Andrews, Kelly Scott is the drummer, and Greg Edwards is the bass player. And, you know, each of one of them just provides a really, really vital component in these songs, and you know, and it shows. It's great. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the most recent EP by Failure?
No, not really. Just best one yet. As I said, New Soundscapes is always good. My favorite Failure yet.
That's fantastic.
I think, like, it's totally head toe to toe with Fantastic Planet.
Wow, that's great. I'm not quite there with it just yet.
At least this EP is.
I think I preferred Your Body Will Be, the last one, but only fractionally. This is great stuff. So my favorite track is probably the first song, Found a Way.
Mm-hmm.
And yours?
Industrial Fields for me.
Distorted Fields?
Or Distorted Fields, sorry.
Cool. It is Industrial. Yeah, that's a really cool song as well. So I'm going to give it an 8.
10.
Hey!
Yeah, that's what it is.
All right, good stuff. Cannot wait for, I would imagine, the fourth and final piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, which, unless they pull something weird.
Yeah, they've been releasing them pretty consistently, like once every 3 months, or give or take. So we should have the end of this four EP cycle by the end of the year.
November,
I hope. That's exciting. Very, very exciting. So next up, why don't we talk about therapy? What about therapy? So Therapy are definitely, at this point, I would say, scene heroes. They refuse to be defined by genre or category or scene, but they are from Larne up in the north.
Nurnarn.
Yeah. So I think we can pretty safely claim them.
We do.
Therapy are one of my favourite Irish bands. I will not apologise for that. They've been around insanely since 1989, and this is their 15th studio album. It's called Cleave.
Yes, no matter what their career dictates, they have not stopped.
They absolutely not. Nor have they even ever taken a breather.
Yeah.
These guys are, they're lifers. Do you know what I mean? They're in distorted rock music for life.
The granduncle of our heavy music.
Absolutely.
Yeah, who's somehow always alive.
Well, yeah, they've remained, like, I would say, consistently unclassifiable for their entire career. You know, I had a dip, real deep dive through, because I would myself, I don't know, I'll ask what yours is as well. My experience with Therapy has been a lot of Trouble Gum, which is obviously excellent, and then I've gotten super into their last three albums, so like A Brief Crack of Light, Disquiet, and then this one, Cleave, and then I actually went back and listened to like bits and pieces. Oh, and sorry, Suicide Pact You First also.
Yes.
But they have 15, so it's impossible. It'd be very, very difficult to know all of Therapy's stuff very well. Yeah. What's your background with Therapy?
Kind of the same.
Yeah.
Definitely the tail ends of each, the bookends of each.
Okay, yeah.
The career, the three albums from the beginning, three albums now.
Yeah.
And I've started to get into the middle.
Yeah, exactly. And to be fair, I think it's you could absolutely say they've remained, like, their sound has not shifted hugely in that time.
The production, maybe.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, exactly. And
the producers definitely dictate more so than what they do.
Yes.
They're definitely naturals at their own sound, of course.
Absolutely. They know exactly what they're doing. Maybe that's a good place to start here then. I think it does harken back to a more vintage sound, this album, than Disquiet or A Brief Crack of Light.
Yeah, this one's a little more rugged.
Yeah,
in some respects, not all.
I think it's a lot more metallic.
Yeah,
it reigns in the experimentation of recent albums a bit. I think it reigns in some of the melodic sensibility and replaces that with angst and aggression and anxiety.
Much more punk rock,
definitely. Yeah. Which is what a lot of people want from Therapy too, because that was what fueled Trouble Gum.
Mm. And Callow, the first single, certainly disappointed many.
Not me.
No, but then Wreck-It Like Beckett came out. And then people were like, okay.
Yeah.
This is Failure. Or this is a therapy, sorry.
Slip of the tongue.
It ain't a Failure.
Yeah. Because the comparison that always comes up when people talk about Therapy is Helmet. And it's not something that I often reach... Well, it's not something that I often think about when I'm listening to Therapy, because the Therapy that I pick and choose is the stuff that doesn't sound quite as much like Helmet.
Same.
That, you know, I mean, real thick slabs of metallic 90s crunch. That's kind of the sound of songs like Wreck-It Like Beckett, I Stand Alone. There's a few other ones on this album.
Yeah, definitely. Therapy, definitely the vocal department have been a bit more melodic as of lately.
Or yes,
at least 2000 onwards.
Yeah, 100%. Especially the last few, just going for those big like lighters in the air kind of choruses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas here it's much more rough and ready. Like Andy Cairns, the singer. You know, this like again, like I Stand Alone. I mean, it's almost him like screaming into the wind.
Yeah.
In the chorus, because he's. You get the sense he's absolutely horrified at the just completely fucked up state of the world.
Yeah.
Throughout this album.
Yeah. I love the lyrics in that one. Not so much the melody.
Yeah.
But the lyrics stand by perfectly in this, regardless of what I think of the vocals.
Absolutely. And he never hides behind, you know, his vocals are always up front and center. He never hides behind like a washes of reverb or anything like that, so you know exactly what he's trying to say.
Yeah, and he mostly says it, he doesn't sing it mostly.
right
mostly yelled from a mountain.
Yeah, especially, you know, Khakistocracy, the second song.
Yeah.
Really, really good. That song is great.
I love that one.
But you know, he's just saying in the most basic terms that like it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
In this ridiculous era that we live in.
Come on, guys. Take the therapy. Come on.
Yeah.
Their name coming into fruition, finally.
And that song is interesting as well, because it develops on what they start in Record Like Beckett by adding in these very interesting, almost old school like Irish hard rock guitar parts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's kind of a second in the middle eight where it could almost be like Horse Lips
or
Thin Lizzy or something.
In Callow.
Oh, Callow too. Has a Callow bit of
Thin Lizzy-ish going on, or Black Star Riders at least.
Oh yeah, I mean the main riff in Callow could not melodically, but definitely rhythmically sounds like it almost has a traditional Irish influence.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a problem with that song. I don't know.
Oh, I don't.
I know I don't. And I don't know why it doesn't connect with me perfectly. Would you know why?
There's something
a little odd about the tempo in the chorus.
It's very like driving beat, but I really like Callow, and I can maybe understand why people think it's a bit of a four chord wonder, because it kind of is, but I think they do enough interesting stuff with the guitar work.
Yeah.
And Andy Cairns is just the king, I think, of writing parts that suit a three-piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he manages to write these guitar parts that are both rhythm and lead at the same time. But the message of that song as well is very interesting, because their name is Therapy, but a lot of this album is basically don't mess with my mind, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like Callow is sort of saying, yes, I'm unhinged, but I don't want, you know, but if you try and medicate my more problematic parts, as in like my demons, as he says, then I will, you know, he fears that he'll lose maybe his more creative inspirational parts as angels. So it's very like hand on heart, same with, you know, a lot of this deals with depression, like the last song, No Sunshine, again has this huge stadium sized sing-along chorus, but it's quite clearly about the experience, his experiences with depression, and that's not just those two songs, it's kind of a through line throughout the whole record.
Mm.
You wonder maybe if the state of politics and conflict and everything in the world is having a negative impact on Andy Cairns' mental health.
Absolutely. Most people's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like if you're non-political or not, it's there now.
The atmosphere that's out there in the world.
It's a social problem now.
But yeah, to answer your question, I'm not sure why it's not connecting. Maybe my first listen I kind of had my eyebrow raised a bit, but Callow I got on board with, definitely.
I expected to go faster. That's maybe the thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Like da 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 instead of da 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 da. Just like 20 BPM faster. I don't know.
I think that's maybe a little bit of a theme, definitely not that particular song, but I hear what you're saying. There's a lot of this stuff that on paper I'm like, no, this should be like a really great all-time classic Therapy song that I want to hear. Like Crutch, for example. It feels like it's this close, but Andy almost sounds like he's kind of half asleep during the chorus.
Yeah, a bit of phoning it in.
It's maybe. I don't want to say phoning it in because I know how much these guys care, but definitely something about that song just feels a little bit off.
The melody of the
vocals. Like it's a little bit lazy or something.
Success, Survival.
That's a great song.
Yeah, that's a good one. That hit it.
That one calls back to, more so than anything else in this album, what I loved so much about A Brief Crack of Light, which is these huge, like, sort of chorus infused guitar lines in the chorus, behind the chorus, you know, that do da 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 that goes in underneath his line in the chorus. I think that's one of my favorite moments in the whole album, actually.
Yeah, great end to it as well. Like, huge.
Success is Survival, so good. So good. It's a bit like that Before You, With You, After You off Brief Crack of Light, or Living in the Shadow of a Terrible Thing. You know, they're just, it's a really, really good one. Mm-hmm. Really, really good song. Beyond that, you know, I think, you know, there's parts of this album that remind me of Quicksand. There's parts that remind me of Nirvana.
Yeah.
There's parts that remind me a little bit of Alice in Chains, a little bit of Soundgarden. It definitely feels the most, like, legacy of their recent stuff, which isn't a bad thing. I think it's going to go down really, really well with fans.
Yeah.
But for me, I prefer proggier, more melodic Therapy.
Same. Yeah. Almost.
Okay.
I appreciate some of the hard-hitting stuff.
Definitely.
Certainly. Like the denna, 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 denna. Oh, I love a lot of that.
Yeah. When they just do like that, you know, open string, really heavy, like 90s metallic riffing. And they do a lot of that here. And it is good. I think this stuff will definitely get crowds going when they play it live.
Yeah. I like a handful of these songs.
Yeah, me too. Certainly. I like a handful of them. And you know, and there's plenty of surprises in there too. Mm-hmm. The chorus from Save Me From the Ordinary, you know, has this really nice, like, it's sort of half chugging, half descending chords. Really interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting, like, just instrumental.
Yeah.
Ideas.
They do a lot of cool distressing moments that I like.
Yeah.
Especially the end part. I love that part at least.
But sometimes they do lean back a little bit too often on the, like, riff, and then the verse is just like fuzzy bass line with a little bit of maybe some like chugging on the guitar, and then chorus, another verse. You know what I mean? Like, there is kind of a little bit of a formula going on at this point.
Yeah.
But the parts where they break away from that are really, really good. So
yeah,
I'm satisfied.
Yeah, that's almost a problem of it being a little too radio friendly, ironically.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in points. What do you think? What do you think is going to be the next single, if there is one?
It's one of the few, like, Success, Save Me, but maybe some of the, like, I Stand Alone.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Crutch. I feel like that's the most radio friendly of the bunch.
Yeah.
But in any case, I'm neither pleasantly surprised nor profoundly disappointed. I think this is just another good Therapy album.
Yeah.
But if I'm gonna reach for a Therapy album from the last 10 years, it's probably gonna be Disquiet.
Yeah,
the last
same
one.
Same, I think.
I don't think there's anything on here that's as good as Do You Know Still Hurts?
Mm-hmm.
Help me. Yeah. I'm stuck. It's so great. Yeah. It's just that's a phenomenal, like, all time great Therapy song. Anyway, it's very good though. It's very, very good. Favorite track?
For a track, actually, I think it is Success.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Save Me, either or.
Oh, well, I'm going to take Success. Mm-hmm. I love that song.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's, that harkens back to the Therapy that I so truly love.
And Cacistocracy is good as well.
Cacistocracy is excellent, and it is okay not to be okay.
I give this a 7.
I'm going to give it a 7.2.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to give it a 7.2. And we should go and see them if they come to Dublin.
Oh, certainly.
Because I've never seen Therapy, and the more I listen to them, the more I like them. So congratulations, Therapy. It you know, to have as many songs that are worth, you know, wanting in the set list after 15 albums as there is on this album, it's pretty good going.
Yeah.
So the album is called Cleave. It's by a band called Therapy? And this will not be the last time we talk about them. You can have my word on that. Okay, why don't we talk about something completely different?
Okay.
This is one that you brought into the show. I would say, like, it's probably the last one that we added. Metric.
I did, yeah.
And The Art of Doubt.
Yeah.
So I want to just issue an apology first and foremost to you, Dylan.
Ha!
It's not something I do very often on this show, but I pushed back a little bit because I knew we had so much to cover this week. I pushed back a little bit about including Metric as an album to review. And I was wrong to do that because this is phenomenal.
Man. See, I'm always right.
Yeah.
No,
you're not. But you were right this
time.
But
when I'm sure there's something that will click, then I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not just trying to fill stuff. Because I have been wrong when I'm just trying to fill in the void sometimes.
But this one, you kind of went, no. You heard it and kind of went, no, this deserves to be on the show. And I think it absolutely does. What's your history with Metric in terms of what led you to this album?
Jeez, what led me to this album? Hearing them on the radio quite frequently back in the early 2000s.
That's exactly me too.
Early 2010s, more so.
On Phantom 105.2?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Exactly that.
Dublin's RIP alternative rock station. I think the death of Phantom 105.2, not to go on too much of a tangent, was that they didn't have enough stuff like this on their playlist.
Yeah, they played stuff from Fantasies quite a bit, which was 2009.
Yeah.
And then once that channel went, I was like, I can't listen to fucking these guys anymore.
And this is when it wasn't so easy to find out the name of a song. You couldn't just Shazam it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember they played Help I'm Alive on Phantom, a pretty heavy rotation, and I was Googling to fuck, and I was just trying to find out who was singing this great song, Help I'm Alive off Fantasies. And anyway, found out it was Metric. Got completely obsessed. Is Fantasies 2009?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So nearly 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So Fantasies for me is like the Metric album, and then I've picked and chosen. There's some great songs off Synthetica, mm-hmm. the second to most recent one.
Yeah.
I didn't go in. Did you go in on
the early stuff?
No, Vegas, the Strangers in Vegas, is that what the last one was called?
Pagans in Vegas. Yes. Yes, I did.
And was it good?
Yeah. It was good. Synthetica was good as well.
I liked Synthetica, but I thought it was a bit patchy.
Yeah.
In any case, The Art of Doubt is none of the above. The Art of Doubt is a massive return to form.
Yeah, early stuff. A lot of, I'd say like 80% new sound, 20% the beginning sounds. Kind of like what Therapy did in a way. But this is their equivalent.
Because I think with Metric, because what they play is this kind of poppy, indie, new wave. They're from Toronto.
Yeah.
And they honed their craft over a very, very long period of time. I think they started up in 1998 and then had basically from 1998 until 2003 to get a sound that was distinctly like their signature.
Mm-hmm.
They actually recorded their third album, which is called, it's called like Up and Blow Away or something, was recorded 2 years before their actual debut album, but it was shelved by the label. And by the time it was approved for release, they were like, we've been gigging so much, we've written so much material, and we've changed as a band so much since we wrote and recorded that album, that we're just going to scrap it and start again. And then it was released without their consent or whatever a couple of years later. What I'm saying is that these guys had developed a really distinctive sound by the time they had their debut album, which means that it hasn't, they've only refined it over the years.
Yeah.
And you get that, like it's unmistakably Metric from the get go.
Oh yeah, definitely layers down some new stuff as well. Very experimental stuff. Really cool vocal techniques. I always love the vocals.
Always
she delivers. It's great.
Emily Haynes is one of my favorite female vocalists.
Female alt vocalists.
Absolutely, she's right up there.
Yeah,
like what she does on Dress to Suppress, just to like pick a highlight right off the out the gates. Vocally is so inventive and playful, and
definitely
everything she does cements the song.
Yeah, it definitely brings shades of like Fleetwood Mac.
Absolutely.
Vocally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on Risk as well, instrumentally and vocally, it has echoes of Fleetwood Mac. I mean, beyond those kind of individual songs, I think more generally you're getting shades of like the Joy Formidable. I think there are comparisons to be drawn there.
Maybe.
Garbage, Wolf Alice, old school, like, gnarly indie music from about 10 years ago, like The Bravery.
Bravery than anything else discussed.
There's a lot of post-punky stuff on this as well.
Yeah.
There's, like, bits of Joy Division, White Lies. I hear I hear that, you know, that 80s worship that was going around for a while, like Gulf Rap and stuff. Mm-hmm. I hear a bit of that too. There's some Bowie love maybe that's dispensed in parts. You know, because it's... This is definitely not what I would call a rock album. Like, it is, rock is absolutely there in the mix.
Yeah.
But it's, they definitely play a more of a...
There's a groove, there's an alt funk to it.
There's even a little bit of alt. There's on that one track, Die Happy, I almost hear a little bit of Lara Kay from All Twins in the guitar line.
Oh, yeah.
It gets kind of tropical and percussive and funky.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly there with Now or Never Now.
Yes. Yeah,
one of my favorites, definitely.
Yeah, Now or Never. Yeah, which actually Now or Never brings me right back to the stuff that was on Phantom's playlist, which would include like Passion Pit and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, you know, it's they're not trying to, in a way that a lot of bands that we would cover, they're not trying to hit all of the tropes of a particular subgenre of rock. You know, they're a pop band that play, you know, poppy, indie, synthy, new wave. So they're not tethered from song to song by any particular set of rules, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why you get so much variety within a band that sounds so unique. You do.
Like, they have the time to... They now have the time in their career to, like, different structures of chords and combinations. Yes. And it's very interesting all throughout. And took me a little bit to get used to some of them, but
yeah,
quite like it. 5-6 listens down the line.
I'm looking forward to when I am... 5-6 lessons down the line myself. I only managed to get 3 in because it's a full hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it outstays its welcome.
There's literally one
track I would drop.
Yeah.
Is it the second last track by any chance?
Yeah, it is.
That's
under the block.
That's the only one.
Or Anticipate.
That's the only track that I would drop. I think, you know, and it takes a lot for me to get into an album that's, you know, over 45 minutes, but here we go, here we are.
Really consistent all the way through, almost all the way through.
I have to give a particular shout out to Underline the Black.
Yeah.
Just the chorus from that song sounds like, do you know when you think you remember a song from your childhood, you know what I mean? And where a chorus is so undeniably catchy and it's such a work of just melodic genius that you think, no, this has to have been a hit at some point in the past. It's not. It's just that good of a chorus that you kind of you just stand in disbelief of how clever it is and how well written it is.
This reminds you of that.
And also I want to say they name check Converge in that song. Because she keeps on repeating Waiting for the Axe to Fall, and Axe to Fall is the name of a Converge album.
It's also a term.
I know it's a term, but there's so many influences on display here that I wonder if like the guys in Metric actually like Converge.
Oh, I think that's maybe a step.
I don't think so. Did you know the title track? We're getting screams from Metric.
Yeah.
In that like middle, in that bridge section. I'd never heard that from Emily Haynes before. You know, she properly like gives a nice yelp, and that's their heaviest track I've ever heard by them. It's real heavy post punk. Yeah. Goodness,
it is. I really like this album.
You know, there's like a philosophical underpinning.
Is there
threads the whole thing? It's almost like a concept album.
Yeah, it's hard. What did you pick out from it? Because I'm a little slow to that.
To be honest with you, it wouldn't jump out at me if I wasn't like looking it up. But apparently, it's based on some theory called The Art of Doubt by a philosopher called Beck, who's basically it's a philosophy of technology and modernity and how, you know, no matter how sophisticated systems become, like the human factor will always contribute some element of unpredictability and risk, which is another song called Risk on this.
Dress to Suppress has a lot of that concept as well.
So I mean, I don't go in too heavy on the concept of it, but
a light concept is always great, you know, it helps the writing
and it ties it all together too.
Yeah,
Holding Out definitely to my ears sounds like a almost like a rallying cry against the social media generation in a way. Like, she's basically saying I'm to blame as well, but you know, we're not living in the here and now when we're, you know, sitting on our phones or whatever. And it's phrased much more eloquently than that. Mm-hmm. But it's basically about living in the moment and kind of looking up from your screen, which I think is, which is an admirable concept and idea. And yeah, I think, I don't know if there's much point in going in too much into the weeds beyond just saying as well that I want to tip my hat to Justin Meldal Johnson for the production job here.
Mm.
It's really full. It's as good as I've heard them sound.
Chunky, huge. Yeah, I love it.
You know what he was involved with?
What?
M83.
Of course.
And Paramore self-titled.
Oh, yay. That's great. Yeah.
Ken Andrews did the some of the mixing and the engineering, but this guy did the production. So
wow.
So it's two sides of the same, you know? It's got the rock side and the synth side. Put them together and you got
quite them. Like that. It's a huge sound. Especially like that start of Dress to Suppress. I love how everything just comes in and it's gradual.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It is.
Blissful. Most of this album is very blissful to listen to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's loads of variety in the synthesizers. They're not tied down to a particular guitar tone. No,
certainly not. That's one of the best parts.
Mm.
It doesn't matter what instrument is driving each song, but it just varies.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. It's absolutely excellent.
Yeah.
So that's Art of Doubt by Metric. My favorite track is probably Underline the Black.
Okay. Dressed is probably mine.
Dressed is Suppressed. That kind of reminded me of Dancing on My Own by Robin.
You know that song? Yeah.
There's a similar vibe, which is always a good thing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a 9.
Yeah, 9.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Metric, if you haven't checked them out, realistically you probably know at least one of their songs because Black Sheep was on the Scott Pilgrim soundtrack.
Yeah, that reminded me. I was like, oh yeah, this band exists. I'm going to hunt them down in the best ways.
Were you watching Scott Pilgrim recently?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like 3 times a year, at least.
Of course. Yeah. You got to get your 3 a year. but in any case, their albums are worth your time because they're a genuinely talented band. Alrighty, let's take a stab at Thrice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your jams.
This is my jams, yes. So this is a band from California. They're called Thrice. And incredibly, this is their 10th album.
Wow.
The 10th album in 20 years. So that's that's an album every 2 years. Very, very prolific, very consistent band. Well, I don't want to say very consistent because they almost have a very daunting discography.
Yeah, this has changed quite a bit since the last album.
Right. So, I didn't even realize how much material they had. I went to see them play Heavy Fest back in 2015. And at that point, they were touring like a double album they just put out. And I think they put out 2 albums since that before the next one that I actually got into. So my background with Thrice is just, I know roughly what they sounded like back in like the early noughties, which was very much sort of, you had a comparison, but I said sort of Funeral for a Friend inspired metalcore, but pretty
Fightstar.
It's quite, you know, like lightly mathy, but quite heavy. I would kind of say like high-pitched, whiny-voiced metalcore. And at that, I wasn't too interested in. And then when they came back in 2016 with To Be Everywhere is To Be Nowhere, and they were this really gravelly, low, husky-voiced, hulking, hard rock, or almost sort of pop rock. It was a complete bolt from the blue.
They still had the Fightstar vibes, and they still do now, I will say that.
I think these guys predate Fightstar, though.
I know.
Yeah.
But, like, there is a connection there.
Well, yeah, there is. Insofar as... Yeah, go ahead.
No.
Well, no, I just think there is, insofar as they both play basically meat and potatoes rock music like Foo Fighters do, or I was trying to think of a few other examples of just straight up sort of hard rock music.
I think I'm just making connections in the vocals.
Bad Sign. Oh, really?
More than anything else. Yeah.
Okay.
Vocals are closest to Fightstar. Just that WWE soundtrack.
No, I don't.
Oh,
disagree totally with that.
Thoroughly.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
but I think Dustin is.
This is the best of the lot.
Yeah, I think I can't think of anybody else that sounds like him. I think that that he is now.
Your Man from 3 Days Grace reminded me quite a bit.
Okay, well, maybe that's the case. Maybe I'm just not. Maybe this is the type of music that I'm just not well versed enough in to be able to draw accurate comparisons.
Yeah, I unfortunately am.
Okay,
I used to like that.
Yeah,
kind of music. But this is a little bit more in my comfort zone with a bit of that.
Yeah, like I would liken this more to something like Bad Sign.
Yeah. Than, okay.
But like Nickelback or whatever.
Yeah.
It's got the same production team as their last one, so it has a very organic, weighty feel to it that the last one had as well. There's a few new elements in the mix. There's more synthesizer now. It starts with almost sort of Depeche Mode style synthesizers on the first track.
That was surprising.
Yeah, they use them in a very similar way to bands like Dark Tranquillity or In Flames or something like that, which is always gonna work for me. But it's the same producer as Chon, and actually there's a few little interesting mathy guitar noodles going on almost subtly in the background in certain songs, which I think he may have had a little hand in.
Yeah.
But I think the overall quality of this is consistently quite high.
Yeah, very moody and broody.
Yes, always.
Yeah.
Always. Like The Dark is definitely channels something new in terms of it. The song, especially when it gets into the chorus, has the kind of vibe that I would associate with modern hip hop, like Kendrick or Kanye West or something. It's got this throbbing kind of bass synthesizer. There's not very little guitar in that chorus.
Yeah, it's horribly and weird.
It's got a kind of a groove that would suit hip hop and rap music, but at the same time, it is very, very much still a Thrice song, and it goes into this huge, apparently 1,000-person crowd singing the chorus.
Oh yeah,
which is, you know, apparently they got like a shit ton of their fans to sing it.
Yeah, back a bit of a Devin Townsend's book.
Yeah, 100%. Yes, definitely. I think that song, The Dark, is probably one of my favorites. Yeah. Actually, it's a really good
breathe
song.
Afterwards is pretty exciting.
Do you want to know something fun about Just Breathe? We're going to make a connection because the engineer on this album is, his name is, I think it's Dan, it's like Radiner or something. I have his name on my notes for the next album, but guest vocals, Emma Ruth Rundle on that song.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And we'll talk about it because we've got her new album come up on the show, but yeah, so she provides the female vocals on that song, and I think Just Breathe, especially at the first sort of opening riff, sounds like a sped up version of an Emma Ruth Rundle song. Like sped up 50% maybe.
Yeah, a little bit. same vibe.
I think I'm interested to get your opinion on this, actually. You know the second song, The Grey?
Yeah.
What do you think of that riff? Because I can't decide if I like it or I think it sounds too much like a heavy metal hoedown. You know, like the guitar, weird, intricate guitar part in the riff?
I think you may be a little bit out of your mind.
Okay. Because all I can think of is like a barn dance when I hear it.
It's got a bit of the country feel to it.
Yeah.
But I
think I might like it.
Well, it is American radio rock.
Mm.
Like, that's where you're getting it from. There's bound to be a bit of country fried something in there, no matter what.
That's what it is.
Yeah. This just is there.
They just left it on the griddle a little too long, that one riff.
Yeah. I like it quite a bit.
Good. The only thing I would say, my only slight gripe with this, because I think it ends really, really strongly on one of the best rock songs of the year, Hold Up a Light, and then, you know, Blood on Blood has this fantastic 70s tinged psychedelia section with loads of harps, you know, going on, and it's really interesting, and
it is,
and then it ends on, you know, something Beyond the Pines, very, very good too.
Yeah, not my favorite.
Not my favorite either, but I think it ends super strong. I think there's a section in the middle where they put all the slow songs together.
Yeah.
And it gets a little cheese ball.
Okay. Maybe I like that more than you.
Okay.
And I disliked the end part.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because so you liked Everything Belongs more than me, maybe?
Yeah.
That's kind of the piano ballad on the album?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think it ended a bit kind of... I don't know what the word I'm looking for.
The very last song.
Yeah, the very last song I didn't quite like.
Yeah, no, the very last song isn't the best, but I think the two before that are good enough that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I think Hold Up a Light just is an absolutely flawless, like, sort of radio rock song.
Yeah.
That pre-chorus, you get so hyped up because he just holds everything. They hold everything back. They hold the tension in place, you know. Hold your lamps a little higher. And then he just hops up and goes, up. hear the grit and the gravel and everything comes together.
I love it when he does that.
Chorus punches through. It's great.
I love it when he does that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah. You know, I think maybe this is, they have a palette of musical ideas that normally doesn't work for me, but the particular combination, that thrice, the way that they do it, works. Yeah.
I think it doesn't work for me as much because I left that behind.
Right.
I had a surplus of that when I was growing up.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I don't really have much of a history with this kind of stuff.
Three Days Grace kind of sound.
I just don't hear
Fight Star. Most of what's featured on wrestling. Most of the most openings.
Yeah.
But this is interesting. This is a lot more interesting, I think.
I don't think you hear nods to, like, there's like a nod to like Opeth in Branch in the River.
Yeah.
That do 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 do.
That's when I start to like it a bit more.
And then that song also, I think, has, again, I feel like I'm talking about the same bands for every album, but I definitely hear a lot of the intensity of like a Converge, not at their most ferocious, but in that song Branch in the River as well. There's a real kind of tremolo, dark, churning kind of feel to it.
Yeah, they have more dimension.
Definitely,
certainly.
Definitely. I don't like this as much as To Be Everywhere Is To Be Nowhere, I don't think, because there's like lulls and drops in it that I think maybe where the momentum kind of gets a little bit killed.
Yeah.
But I think the good stuff on here is as good as anything that was on that album.
I think so. Yeah.
And it makes me want to go back and get more familiar with their sort of post-2004 stuff.
I think they're pretty consistent with that. With quality.
Yeah.
I think I like this more than the other album.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. And weirdly enough, this one feels like, Blood on Blood has a lot of railing against the system, but I almost feel like they got that all out of their system on To Be Everywhere Is To Be Nowhere. This one feels more personal.
Yeah.
Whereas that last album was very, very political, and it was a huge attack on like the Obama administration. So I was kind of interested to hear how much more fucked up the world has gotten since then, what their reaction would be, but it seems they've turned the gaze inward a little bit, which is totally fine. Actually, a lot of bands doing that. I think it's almost the situation is so bad that a lot of people
focus
don't want
to engage
with it.
Guys.
Yeah, everyone's like, I got my own shit to deal with. So, what was your favorite track?
I think The Dark.
Dark's great.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with Hold Up a Light. Mm. And I'm going to give it an 8.
Sweet. I'll give it a 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Still pretty A's and 7.
Definitely. All right. Cool. So that was Palms by Thrice.
Yeah.
It's hard edge radio rock. I think anybody
with a bit of weird dark synth, and that makes it a bit more interesting.
Yes, definitely. And a little bit of 90s inspired guitar, which you could never go far wrong as far as I'm concerned. Okie dokie, now why don't we just go with the companion piece,
yes.
The featured guest on Thrice's album, Emma Ruth Rundle.
Yeah.
So she is from LA, but she's currently based in Kentucky with her boyfriend, whose name is Evan Patterson. And he actually features on this album, so it's like an endless linking cycle of guest spots. But this is where the cycle ends. Album is called On Dark Horses. It is her, I want to go ahead and say, fourth solo album. It's third or fourth.
Yes.
Follow up from Marked for Death in 2016, which is kind of how I caught wind of her, I guess. So I've only been listening to Emma for maybe 2 months or so.
Yeah, I have not.
Okay.
It's new to me.
This is new to you.
Familiar. Familiar sounds.
Yeah. I would not call myself a long time fan or anything like that. I'm not intimately familiar with her other work, with bands like Nocturnes, Red Sparrows, and Marriages. But that being said, everything I've heard from her, I have liked.
Nocturnes is familiar, though.
Yeah. So, On Dark Horses, I think, just to address the elephant in the room. I think the nearest comparison, artistically speaking, is probably Chelsea Wolfe.
At the start.
But, exactly.
At the start, yeah.
She actually goes two or three songs
have that.
Yeah, I think she definitely goes off in her own direction as well. And I don't think this is quite as relentlessly dark as Chelsea Wolfe.
No, as I said, like, it that comes right after the first song.
Yeah.
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 And then even later on, it gets a little bit less bleak. But, Still has that vibe. More open, airy, but less depressing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It still has that vibe. It's in the vocals constantly.
Right. Yeah. I think she's got a lovely low singing register.
Mm.
Kind of reminds you of Mish from White Lung in that way.
Yeah.
Like a more sort of fragile version. But her voice is definitely the main attraction here.
Yeah.
But she's a very, very accomplished songwriter as well. You know, you kind of, in terms of the, like, the soundscape, it's very much big washes of distortion, but it sounds like they're maybe about 6 miles away.
Yeah.
And then combined with picked out guitar.
It has really crispy, crunchy guitar.
Yeah.
Like, in there, it's not too heavy.
No. There's nothing abrasively heavy. The thing that's heavy about this album is the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much the actual sonics of it.
Drive through the mountains to this.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, it's a great vibe.
I would be worried about getting murdered.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. But it's got that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And there's... And
True Detective vibe.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. There's definitely a much more of a, like, desert heat rising from this. And almost as well, like, a very slight twinge of country.
Yeah.
Adds
to the mellowness, I think.
Mm.
You know,
not so much in the, like, in the heavier parts, but those kind of picked out sections, the quieter sections that make up most of the album. I think there's a little bit of Pine Grove or early Black Foxes, that kind of alternative country.
Yeah,
vibe.
Yeah, early Black Foxes, certainly.
Yeah.
Especially in Dark Horse and stuff like that.
Oh, that song is so great, right?
Yeah. What a melody as well.
the single version is like 3 minutes and the album version is like 6. If there was one song that I wanted a double of, it was a Dark Horse, so
yeah.
I'm delighted that version is that made it to the album.
Yeah, that's when the album started really getting me as something completely different.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, the first tracks, as I've explained, were a bit broody and familiar of certain things we've covered already.
Okay.
But then it started getting really interesting. It started getting really chill, country, and then it came in at points with the dark heaviness. But not too much.
It's definitely quite doomy throughout. I
can relax to this album for the most part.
Yes.
I can relax to the other band we covered that's similar.
Yes. No, you can't. It's airier. There's more room to breathe on it, definitely. I think we may have had exact opposite experiences then with this album, because I think when it's at its most active and when the songwriting is the most sort of compressed, which is Fever Dream, Control, Dark Horse, the first three songs, and then the last track, which is called You Don't Have to Cry, those are my favorite moments here.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to pick favorite childs. I like both halves of what they do, and it's definitely a matter of halves.
Yeah,
with this, there's two particular sounds they do in this really well.
Definitely,
I think
I think the songwriting is definitely more elongated, rather than it does. There's verse, chorus, verse type songs, and then there's also ones where she kind of weaves like a tapestry of a particular melodic. Like feeling, I guess, over the course of 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah,
and that's what happens in the middle.
They take their time, and it, of course, gets very, very soundtracky in a way.
It can do, definitely, definitely. Shout out to the band who play alongside her here.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll just give them a quick shout out. The drummer is Dylan Naden.
Sweet.
Guitar, vocals, and piano are courtesy of her boyfriend,
nice.
Evan Patterson. Todd Cook is on bass, and then the producer is Kevin Ratterman, who was the engineer on Palms by Thrice. So that's the connection there between the two albums. But I think it's really, really good. I'm a little bit disappointed that I don't like it from start to finish as much as I liked the singles. but I think that might be something that will come with time.
Yeah, I did it first. Yeah. I'll grow to it, I think.
I'm definitely going to go back to it.
I'll find different situations walking around where songs will strike inspiration more than they do at other moments.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
That's what makes for a really good album that can last.
Mm.
So this is one of those albums.
Yeah, and the fact that You Don't Have to Cry, I think is definitely one of the best songs on the album, and it swells and builds and it has this huge chorus, and I think even having that at the end of the album is more reason to go back to it for me and to get to know that middle section a bit better.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm concerned, I think those three, Fever Dream, Control and Dark Horse, are I think three of the best crafted songs that I've heard in a long time in this genre.
Yeah, they're up there.
Definitely.
But I, of course, I do like it when it proceeds.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't expect to be getting vibes of, like, you know, Radiohead and Tame Impala and Wolf Alice and stuff like that, but they really just subtly suggest a lot of different influences.
Yeah, I appreciate that quite a bit.
Mm.
My favorite is Dark Horse, absolutely, or Dead Set Eyes, either or.
Oh, Dead Set Eyes, cool too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dark Horse for me, definitely. I absolutely adore that song.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a 7.
Ooh, I'm going to give it a 9.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it.
This is one of the better ones this week for me.
Okie dokie. So that's Emma Ruth Rundle.
Yeah.
Or Undle, if you're looking for her. And the album is called On Dark Horses. If you're just sort of lying around about 2 a.m. in the morning, could be a good time to put it on.
Yeah, this will haunt you.
Definitely. You won't be able to sleep. So I think we're going to just quickly move on to our... Oh, have we covered all of our... No. It's our final new release of the week. I knew we hadn't.
A little bonus for you.
Yes, this is...
Maybe not necessarily for me, but we'll get to that.
That waits to be seen. Okay. I'm very excited to talk about this band. So sure. They've been Horror My Friend.
Horror My Friend.
Okay. This is another in a long string of really interesting bands that we've covered from Australia.
Australia, okay.
They're from Adelaide, and the album's called Home Life. So I think that, you know, this is a band I think that was suggested to me by Spotify some months ago, and they couldn't be more tailor fit for me because they play this wide spanning mix of 90s nostalgia.
The guitar and the production mostly, for the most part.
Yeah. So it's just this messy, grimy indie rock that's kind of got shades of My Bloody Valentine, Sonic Youth, bits of My Vitriol, or and then another Australian band we covered, Foam. I hear a lot of that Foam on this as well. Just shoegazy, grungy, alternative rock, and with a singer who's definitely got a snarly, snarky kind of attitude.
Yeah,
yeah,
he certainly does.
I presume that you had some qualms with this, but any plus points?
Yeah, plus points. The guitar work is very, very cool.
Yeah,
very, very driven. Of course, it works well with the drums, especially. I love that whole style. Definitely goes back to, of course, the post-punk.
Yes, that post-punk too. You
talked about.
Definitely.
But my one big qualm, can you guess what it is? What could it possibly be?
Well, it might be the same as my qualm, which is the production.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, okay, cool.
It gave me quite the headache.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because I can hear good music behind it.
I agree with you. I think
the vocals maybe added a bit to that. Vocals in that cotton wool tin can production can...
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think the vocal performance here is stunning. The singer, unfortunately, the band don't have... there's no breakdown of which name does what instrument. So I actually don't know. I'm not going to take a bet on what the singer's name is from the list of three names of people I don't know. But the singer, I think he does a really, really good job of combining, great hooky melodies with the odd tortured scream. Like, he'll just come out of nowhere with a scream. And he does that really, really well on DIY's the last track, which I think is like a... could be a future indie disco classic. It's just got that feeling to me that it could get people dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point about the production, I think it's a real Shame.
Yeah, I could barely get to the end of the album.
Personally, I enjoy this album immensely
because I listen to music very loudly in my headphones.
On my headphones, yeah.
Yeah, on my headphones.
Yeah.
And yeah, it didn't lend too well to that.
It doesn't lend itself to cranking the volume up too high. But I think if you've got decent sound gear, I think it sounds good. It's not an album to listen to driving around, because once you sort of crank the volume, it's quite a treble heavy production, and it does needle at your ears a little bit.
Yeah.
That's my one qualm, but I think the music is so good that I can overlook the production. I just need to be listening to it in a quiet space,
mm-hmm.
where you can keep the volume low and still hear the full spectrum.
Yeah.
If you crank the volume, it does start to get a little bit painful.
But that, for me, that is quite a an oxymoron of an action to take.
Yeah.
To listen to this kind of music quietly.
Yeah, but
it's like the decibel curfew on hard rock music. True. That some concerts have.
But it's not exactly Metallica, you know what I mean? Like it has a lot of intricacy, a lot of complexity to it.
Reckless abandon on it as
well. Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It can get very messy.
It reminds me of Pup in that sense. Do you remember Pup?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Totally Pup.
Or Modern Baseball, who I think actually have broken up, which is a real shame.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Oh. Especially on... there's a track actually called Wedding, which most recalls any other band from Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Insofar as I think there's a little bit of Rolling Blackouts Coastal Fever mm-hmm. on there. But that song reminds me of Wedding Singer by Modern Baseball.
Yeah.
Where the riff is so good that it becomes the chorus.
Yeah.
Constant kind of. Yeah. There's a lot of that where this guitar line that'll just get stuck in your head just screams out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very mm-hmm. cool. Other bits and pieces that I heard, you know, that there's a song called Admit None, which I think is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Kind of brings to mind Perish.
That's where it kind of clicked for me, I guess.
Yeah. They do a lot of really fast tempo stuff that reminds me of Joyce Manor.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost a hardcore feel to one of the songs called Rattle Bones. It's a little bit more energetic than I usually go for in this genre,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think that's a bad thing.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because this is what I'd hopefully want from this genre.
Yeah.
But alas.
But you know I go for the more sort of Jaws, Daylight, Basement side of things, the mid-tempo to slow tempo, fuzzed out, dreamy side.
I mean, thankfully, I've heard those bands before,
mm.
and this does nothing new for me.
Okay, well, that's fair.
I've heard those bands plenty of times.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard the particular mix. Like, the same way that I didn't think you were as impressed by Fiddlehead as I was. Because I think, it's one thing to do one particular element of this music well. But I think what Her, My Friend, and Fiddlehead do both is that they are able to pick from post-hardcore, post-punk, 90s alternative, and all these different things, and put them together in a way that is eclectic but also makes sense.
Yeah, it's eclectic. But for me, it's still a little boring.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit boring.
Okay, that's totally fine.
And the mix didn't help for me.
No, the mix does not help.
It didn't help my patience.
I would say that the mix alone knocks this down one point for me, one full point. Because, you know, there's so much, I think there's so much to love on here. I go back to DIYs, the last song.
But would the mix be better on a vinyl?
That is possibly, yeah, quite possibly. I would look into it.
We've had a few things like that this year.
I would look into it, definitely, because I think that's a song that if it got radio play in the right places could become a hit. You know,
because mm-hmm.
It's just there's far lesser songs that have gotten ingrained in the public consciousness than that. I think it's I think it's brilliant. So my favorite song, in case it wasn't already obvious, is the last one, DIYs.
Okay.
What about yours?
Since it was hard to me to get to the end of this album for me, it was probably near the start of the album.
Did you listen to it all the way through at all?
I did.
Okay, cool.
It just took a while.
Otherwise, I'd have to retract your review badge.
No. I think. Give me a sec. I'm trying to remember because I only got to listen to this a couple times.
Yeah.
I think it was Ultraviolet.
Ultraviolet was.
That was catchy. It's very catchy.
Yeah. The guitar work on that one in particular is excellent. I'm going to give it an 8, which tells me that, you know, if it had a more high class production job, it would be a 9. But it's an 8 for me. Yeah.
A 5 for me.
Wow. Yeah. Okie dokie. Hey, that's absolutely not the biggest differential we've ever had. not by a long shot.
You've kept such classics from this review station.
You know it.
Yeah. But hey, it's for the people.
It's particularly this person. This is exactly my jam.
Like, I wish you brought Idols to this.
Spoilers for, you know, review of reviews.
But they've been making waves, I'm not going to lie.
They have. Yeah. They certainly have.
But anyway.
And they've been well covered in other areas of the press, or is at least, I don't feel like I've been hearing much about this album, and I think it was worth bringing
to
the show.
That's fair. Like, pick for yourself. When we choose what to do for this, just pick for yourself. Don't pick for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say what I want to say. It's absolutely more entertaining that way.
Absolutely. So the album's called Home Life. It's by Horror, My Friend. It's their second album. Check it out if you enjoyed the 90s as much as I did. Okay, so last album of the week. We're going to hop into our time machine and go back 7 years.
Oh, so
it's
long.
It's been a while. I feel like this album is still new, but it's not at all. It's called Welcome Reality. It's the first album by the London-based electronic music duo. Well, actually, trio.
Trio, yeah.
Nero.
Mostly now.
I think at the time they were a duo. Mm-hmm. But Alana Watson, who's the girlfriend of... one of the guys' names. I couldn't tell you whose girlfriend she is. She's one of the guys' girlfriends. Their names are Dan and... Is that John? Goodness me. My phone is not giving me a good time of things, but it's... anyway, there's two of them while I pad for time. Two guys in Nero, both of them producers, and actually they had been doing their thing for quite a long time before this album came out. They kicked off in 2004.
Wow.
Yeah, so they were a band for 7 years when Welcome Reality finally came out. And it couldn't have come out at a better time, I think, in terms of capturing the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I definitely think it is dated in a good way, you know?
But at the same time, I think it's varied enough, and it pays tribute to the past while being very much of its time enough that I don't think it sounds disastrously dated either.
Yeah.
That might just be me.
It might just be you. It's also me comparing it to their 2015
their second album, their most recent album.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where they began.
Yes,
and it is quite a journey they took.
Quite a journey it is. So, Welcome Reality is a concept album about sort of a futuristic, post-apocalyptic Earth. It's kind of a love story, and they go for, you know, the front of the album has a movie poster aesthetic, and there are moments in the album that are kind of Blade Runner inspired, I think that's fair to say.
Yes.
I think, you know, 2808, the opening track, very much sort of Vangelis, Tangerine Dream kind of vibes before we kick into Doomsday,
mm-hmm.
which was the event, December the 1st, 2808, the event that kicked off the apocalypse.
Yeah, as we all know.
Yeah, and I think it sounds suitably apocalyptic.
It does.
Yes.
In that weird dubsteppy way.
Yeah.
That was of the zeitgeist. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, I think basically the musical canvas on this album is everything from electro house, complextro, dubstep, brostep. There's jungle. There's like basically EDM.
Yeah.
There's bits of stadium rock. Mm. There's real songwriting put into a genre of music that doesn't often get pop style songwriting.
Yeah, it doesn't get verse chorusy.
No, how many electronic musicians have a singer? Do you know what I mean? That kind of way.
Yeah, it's been growing lately, but this was one of the first for me.
Me too.
In this vein.
Me too. I think the only ones that I can think of prior to this was Crystal Castles. No, maybe that's just me being hugely ignorant, but
perhaps. But whatever made the most impact, really, for.
Because, yeah, okay, well, am I missing anybody from this list of artists around the same time, roughly in the same genre. So you've got Pendulum,
really.
Bass Nectar, yeah. The Prodigy, Scream, Skrillex, Flux Pavilion, Deadmau5, and then maybe some of the guys behind things like Circus or Monster Cat.
I think Pendulum is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah, but Pendulum stuck reasonably rigidly to one subgenre of electronic music, that being drum and bass. Whereas I think Nero expanded that mentality out to pretty much anything with a keyboard.
Yeah.
And made it all big and bombastic. And,
yeah. And if anything...
addictive.
This is the bombastic thumbprint in their career so far.
Absolutely.
Their later album is more it's got more of a like poppy musical know-how, but this one is a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, never like in the whole running order, it pinwheels from pure, you know, I would say like beatport pandering, like electronic music in its purest form to at 100% radio pop, you know? So like songs like My Eyes, Me and You, Promises, like those are all radio singles.
Crush on You is there as well.
Crush on You, which is a cover of the Jets, or is a remix, I suppose, of a song from the 60s.
I'm familiar with it, yeah.
You know, and then at the same time, there's really intense, almost kind of specialist, just like electronic music head stuff on this. Like Guilt is one. Where another one would be Scorpions, you know, those kind of just basically purely instrumental electronic tracks. And I think the production on this album is beyond what anyone had done at this point.
Yeah, pretty phenomenal to handle all that at once and make it just interesting.
Like,
you know,
Skrillex gets shat on quite a lot, but I actually really like Skrillex's music. But one thing that Skrillex is not excellent at is creating a dynamic mix. I think what Nero did with this album is they just created like a feast for the ears. It's a Technicolor 3D sound experience that I find, beyond any discussion of the songwriting, I just find listening to the sounds of this album a deeply satisfying experience.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. It's very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there are very many pieces of music that I can think of that have a bigger impact than like Reaching Out, for example. That moment when, you know, and it's not just a sample, they actually got Daryl Hall from Hall & Oates in to record a completely original set of vocals for that track so they could do exactly what they wanted to do with that. Yep. And that moment when the bass kicks in Reaching Out is definitely a speaker system tester.
Yeah, certainly.
It's just it's a really, really powerful. Yeah. I don't know. A lot of this album hits me emotionally.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just the time that I was listening to it.
Probably. Because less so for me. For me, it's the next album that got me.
That's interesting. Because the next album got me too. And I love it just as much. But there's something about this that just I thought was just so exciting. I think is still so exciting to this day that I don't hear.
Yeah. Of course, they can only top themselves, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's also, beyond what we've already mentioned, I think there's also a lot of time given to the Knight Rider sound, the Outrun drive, sort of nighttime neon, like, like Blade Runner, but amped up to 11 kind of sound, like that you would hear from Kavinsky or Miami Nights 1984 that would have done it later.
Yeah.
You get that on Reaching Out as well, where there's due to the Sega Genesis kind of solo that comes in
towards the end. That's fantastic.
It's dude. Yeah, it sounds like something that could have been out of a Sonic the Hedgehog soundtrack. But you get it, you kind of get it throughout.
Yeah, Innocence is really cool. That's one of my favorites.
Absolutely.
Certainly.
And Innocence, I think, was their very first single.
Oh yeah.
And you can hear that Innocence more so than anything else on the album, particularly, you know, the sort of the stadium rock songs. Sounds like something that could have been on a Monster Cat compilation, but in a good way, you know. But it would have been the best song on that particular Monster Cat compilation. Yeah. And then also, you know, and then I think, like, to go back to Me and You, I mean, you just don't very often hear, apart from maybe Pendulum, you just don't very often hear power chord based songs that are in this genre. No, from bands that are wholly accepted into the electronic music genre.
Oddly stadium rockish.
Yeah. Like, okay, like End of Shikari do it, Chemists do it, Pendulum have done it, sure, but not to the same extent as a song like Me and You.
Yeah.
You know, where that just felt like a hip swinging rock song, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that on this.
Yes.
This is definitely a summer album to get through. Earlier on in the year, I went for a walk with this.
Oh,
on,
yeah.
Like the hottest day, and it was very, very much telling.
Yeah. And what's telling as well is that you can sit down with an acoustic guitar and play a lot of these songs, especially the ones that feature Alana on the vocals.
Oh, yeah.
And they still sound great. They don't need that glorious 4K production job with all the electronic bells and whistles to still be good songs. Like Promises still sounds great on an acoustic guitar. Mm. And I just want to... I really like how the standard edition of the album ends with Departure. You know, it kind of sounds like the end of a journey.
Yeah. Was it the case for what we listened to?
But...
Yeah, Departure, yeah.
But I actually, until we kind of went into this one as a retrospective, I didn't realize that that Departure was the last song, because I always had the full sort of deluxe edition, whatever. So there was actually... an entire half hour beyond Departure that I know just as well as the rest of the album.
Yeah, I think I remember that quite.
Yeah, so there's like, and it fills in gaps in, I suppose, what you would think of as the story or the concept. Like, there's a song called New Life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where this robotic woman introduces you to a virtual reality system, kind of inspired by Second Life, the game, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. And there's a song called Choices where there's he almost sounds like Dennis Hopper or something, and he's giving a speech about how, you know, humans are affecting the planet and evolution itself and everything. And both songs are absolutely brilliant and essential, I would say.
Yes, yeah.
in the running order.
I think so too, but yeah. It's up to however you want to listen to this, because it has so much to give.
It does.
If you're into EDM at all, in all its flavors, it's got something to give.
I would be absolutely shocked if anybody that has ever enjoyed electronic music doesn't enjoy at least something on here.
Yeah. I think it's a bit too clubbish for me personally.
Okay.
Which is why the second album got me more. Because that's when they started taking that turn.
But then again, I would say Satisfy off the second album is more clubbish than anything on here.
Well, if you listen to the first three songs on the second album.
Yeah.
They're like absolute kind of grimes, I guess. Does that as well.
Yeah.
Where it's full-on songs with melody and a singer.
Yeah. I suppose they had integrated Alana more completely into the setup, whereas on this one, she was still a guest singer.
Oh, yeah, you get that feel.
Yeah.
That there's more pieces being discovered in this. But that's what I find interesting about this one.
But I love the fact that you can listen to this. It's actually, including the bonus tracks, it is the same length as any film. It's about an hour and 35 minutes. And every track bleeds into the next. I personally don't mind at all that you get a sort of a verse, chorus, verse, pop song, and then a club banger, and then a more ambient chilled out track, and then a track with a sample. That doesn't bother me because there's enough variety. But I can understand that, you know, and I think that second album too is just as good as this. But it's a different thing.
Different flavors, really.
It's a different beast.
Mm-hmm.
But needless to say, I think worth going back and checking out if you're only familiar with, say, you know, Promises.
Yeah, certainly.
You know, because it has a lot more to give than just that.
Yeah, no, it's an exciting album, dude, every time I put it on.
Yeah. And being able to use the, as I say, like the tools of the bro step trade, but to use that, the wubs and the churning mechanical bass and everything to, I would say, like a much more, I don't want to say subtle or like textured or nuanced use, but just a more interesting use, more interesting chords, more interesting rhythms, just more progressive than a lot of those artists.
It's very progressive.
Yeah,
it's good. The theming, dude, I love that.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I feel like we've done it justice here. and just that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of organic touches to the drums as well. There's like there appears to be quite a bit of live drums. There's a lot of live guitar, and or just basically moments of human fallibility on a very mechanical electronic album that make it feel more authentic.
Mm-hmm. That's what they do best, I think, at times.
Definitely.
For me.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. Okie dokie. So that's, unless you have any final thoughts?
No, we just have another packed week coming up.
You know it. It
keeps on stacking. October is hell. Oh my God.
You think we didn't enjoy it. But we do.
Yeah.
So that's Welcome Reality by Nero. I would say definitely one of the landmark albums in electronic music of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Check it out.
It's hard to be topped.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Because I think that it was developed upon.
Yeah.
And in many ways improved upon.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so different to anything else that was out at the time that I think, just as a single piece of work, it's very difficult to compare it to anything else.
Yeah, especially the extended edition.
Yes. Check that out. Okay, so as Dylan was saying, it's going to be a very, very packed couple of weeks. So we have a lot of albums to get listening to.
Yeah.
Get reviewing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and you can follow our playlist on Spotify, that'll have all of our upcoming albums. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, you can email us killshuffle@gmail.com.
Yeah, send us a carrier pigeon, whatever you want.
Why not, whatever you feel like. So in any case, we'll see you next time.
Catch you later.
Mind yourself.